Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
You know, a lot of people don't know that the term Little Green Men comes from Kentucky. It was an incident out in the western part of the state back in the 1950s in which it is alleged that a spaceship visited a farm and Little Green Men came out. And now they have a festival there every year, and that is where the term Little Green Men actually came from. There's actually been a ton of really fascinating and interesting and credible UFO reports out of the state of Kentucky. And since this last week, the United States government was like, yeah, there's some things out there. We don't know what they are. We don't know who's behind them. We don't know where they come from. I thought it'd be fun to tackle the topic of UFOs. So I want to bring on Jeff Waldrich. He is a 18-year veteran law enforcement officer here in the state of Kentucky. He's seen a few things. He's investigated a few things. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
How are you doing? Glad to be on. Thanks for letting me come on and talk about topics of the unknown and weird and, you know, everything everybody likes to secretly dabble in, but not publicly.
Yeah, it's funny because people are like, people love to wonder about this stuff, hence the popularity of UFO shows, but nobody wants to admit if they actually saw
right.
one. Because I've got friends, I'm like, you ever see anything you couldn't explain? And they always kind of look at me with that side eye like, first they say no, and then they go, well, there was this one time. You know, it's kind of funny how that goes.
It takes them a little bit to warm up to you.
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, you know what? I've seen something. Mm-hmm. I need to talk about it.
You know, and here's what's funny, though. I've always been fascinated with this topic. I grew up in Arizona. My parents were missionaries on the American Indian field. So I grew up about as in the middle of nowhere as you can possibly get. Like Arizona desert,
right.
Close to the border with Mexico, 60 miles from the nearest town. The little town that I lived in called Sells, Arizona, was 20 miles, basically, we were kind of at the foot or in a valley next to a 7,000-foot mountain range. 20 miles away on top of that mountain range sits one of the most famous observatories in the world, Kitt Peak Observatory. So
right.
Our community had an agreement with them that we would have yellow streetlights, like dark yellow streetlights, and they would all point down so that it would limit the amount of light pollution. The reason I'm telling you all this is because it was super easy to get just a little bit out of town and literally see the Milky Way, okay? Tons
wow.
of UFO sightings out in Arizona. And I'm telling you right now, I tried, brother. I tried, and I never saw one. I got friends that saw them. My dad saw the Phoenix lights. I never saw one, and it drives me nuts.
I've actually saw what I would say is a UFO, you know, as in the term.
Right.
You know, an unidentified flying object twice. But you know, who knows if it was ours or, you know, theirs, but, you know, they were definitely, two weird, incidents. And one was actually on a plane. You know, I was on a plane and I seen this silver spear, and a friend of mine, Lee Kirkland, was with me both times when I saw these, but, the spear was like a little, it was almost like if you dropped a piece of solder on the surface and kind of that little silver ball that you get.
Weird.
That's what it looked like, but it was moving really fast. It was moving way faster than the plane.
Was that in the and that
was
in the daytime?
Looked at each other.
Yeah,
it was in the daytime. The sun was reflecting off of it. And we were like, what was that? Because that's moving way faster than the plane, and planes, of course, you know, are going really fast.
Right.
And then we were driving one night, going down 127 towards the Frankfort area, and we saw what looked like a shooting star, and it kept looking like a shooting star until it went straight down to the ground. It didn't, it stopped angling, went straight down, and the
really?
Light shut off like you flipped a switch. So that was kind of strange.
Oh, that's weird.
But those are two incidents where I can't explain what those were.
Right. My dad saw the Phoenix lights, and I grew up seeing those flares because there was a Air Force Proving Grounds on
right.
one side of the reservation where I grew up, and then there was Davis-Monthan Air Force Base on the other side. And Davis-Monthan is where a lot of the A-10 Thunderbolts, the Warthog, that really ugly plane that's like a tank
right.
killer, and so they fly low and slow. And then there were some I think there were some F-15s and F-16s at Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix, and they would fly over the res all the time. And off in the distance up towards the proving grounds, you could sometimes see them dropping the flares. And so I know what the flares look like, and that's what they said the explanation for that was. I've seen them on TV. Some of the film that I see on TV looks like flares. Others, I'm like, there's no way that is. And my dad said when he saw him, he was like, and my dad's not a UFO guy. Like, he is not.
Right.
All he said was, I don't know what that was, but it wasn't flares.
Right.
So that's interesting. I want to talk about specifically what the military has come forward and the government's come forward and kind of admitted that there's things out there. They don't know what they are. Before we do, though, I thought it'd be kind of interesting to look at some of the more credible incidents that have happened in the state of Kentucky that people might not be aware of. And I was kind of researching this, and there's three that I sort of wanted to pull out, because when I read the sort of synopsis of the story, I was like, holy crap, that whatever that was, it wasn't a made-up story, right? Like, maybe it wasn't what they thought it was or what everybody is assuming it is, but that wasn't a made-up story. These people are too credible. And there's too much evidence that something happened. So let's go through a couple of those. Let's start with the Stanford abduction. What happened there in the 1970s?
That was in 1976, around January 1976. And basically what happened there was there were three ladies. They had went out to this restaurant down there. And the restaurant, the building, as far as I know, still exists. But I believe it was called the Little Red Apple or something of that nature. But it was a restaurant. And they had went out, they had kind of a girl's night, and they were driving back, and they were on this road. And what happened was they saw these lights. It was around, about 11:15, something like that. And they should have arrived home about midnight from where they lived. And, well, guess what? They didn't get home till 1:25. There was time missing. And they couldn't explain it. They saw that big old flash of light. They seen a disc-shaped object. And they thought nothing of it until this time was missing. There was a great amount of time that was missing. And so that kind of got them thinking. And there was actually pretty decent evidence as far as this abduction case goes. There were quite a bit of signs as far as on their card and things like that. And back then, that restaurant was called the Redwood Eatery, I believe.
Okay, that's not where the Bluebird Cafe is nowadays. That is the best restaurant in Kentucky, in my opinion.
Oh no, that's not it. No, okay. it's a little building down there, but it was the Redwood Eatery. Is okay. What they called it back then. But they were in an old Chevy Nova driving down the road. Heading toward Houstonville, if everybody in Kentucky kind of knows where that is, Stanford to Houstonville.
Yep.
And when I travel that road, I've traveled it before, just to kind of get a perspective. I mean, you get a little eerie, you know, you're like, well, this is where all this went down.
Yeah.
And all these places still exist, but, they seen this big object in the sky, bright red object, and then, you had that missing time. And
yeah, there's...
Their car sped up and all this other strange stuff went on. So, I mean, there was some crazy stuff that went on there with those three ladies.
That stretch, I don't know which road exactly that is. I can't remember, but I know that, no matter which side of Stanford you're on, the stretch that you're coming into, whether you're coming from the south on US 27 or you're coming from Danville on what, I think that changes to 150 there, that stretch between Danville and Stanford, or you're on the other side headed toward Crab Orchard or going north towards Nicholasville. The stretch of road coming into Stanford, there's residences and farms, but it's at night, man, there ain't much out there. There's not a lot of lights.
It's very rural, you know.
Yeah.
And, they all had a burning sensation, and all this different things. And the crazy part was 1 hour and 20 minutes later, they found themselves back in their car and again driving toward Liberty, toward that where they were headed to. So, they didn't think anything of it till they got home and seen what time it was. And they were like, wait a minute, there's something going on here.
Okay, two things. Two things interesting about this story. First of all, this matches very closely with an abduction story out of Houston. It wasn't an abduction, but an encounter story out of Houston, Texas, where two women and a child were in a car. And there was there's a lot of credible evidence. They even had a NASA guy investigate it, but essentially it was a similar thing. This thing appears, the light burns them. These people actually do have physical burns. They have to get treated by a doctor. One woman eventually dies of cancer, and their family believe it was radiation poisoning. Now, in that case, there was a squad of U.S. military helicopters that reacted to this thing and then guided it off. So there's like theories of, was this sort of some sort of testing of some sort of nuclear powered device that we had that these people just accidentally ran into and it burned them? But these women in Stanford all were hypnotized, and Separately, all three of them told the same type of story that details matched except for maybe some specific things that happened to some of them. And then they had physical.
They also took lie detector tests with the Lexington Police Department.
Yeah.
And passed them. I tried to get a hold of those records, but of course they're not going to keep them if it's not like a murder case or
right.
something like that. So,
right.
But yeah, it was those records are long gone, but that's where they actually went for their lie detector.
Fascinating. Tell me about the Captain Thomas Mantell at Fort Knox story.
Well, this one that always kind of pops up when you're looking in, because it was one of the closest ones to Roswell.
Okay.
Roswell happened in 47 and Mantell happened in January of 48. And Thomas Mantell was a pilot, and he was flying, just normal Air Force stuff. And I've actually able to get the Project Blue Book documents from the investigation of it. But supposedly they scrambled the jets. They seen, there was some kind of mysterious object. They thought it was, maybe some kind of enemy object or something like that. So they received a report from Highway Patrol that an unusual aerial object was near Maysville, Kentucky, is what it said. So they took off and they were looking. And then, of course, the four P-51 Mustangs is what they were flying. And they said that what was weird about it was Thomas Mantell continued to chase this object, and then eventually his plane crashed on a farm south of Franklin, Kentucky, on the Tennessee-Kentucky state line. And supposedly he just kept going straight up, straight up, straight up, straight up. And, there's all kinds of rumors associated with it, and some saying that Mantell's body was riddled with strange holes and things like that. But there's no evidence of that. That's not documented in any of the official reports. But this was supposedly one of the first cases where a UFO caused the death or was the cause of death for a human being because he was chasing this unknown object. But back when Project Blue Book was actually going on, they investigated it and, they put out a pretty extensive report on it.
What did they say the explanation was? I mean, obviously, these are military guys. They're chasing on orders unidentified flying objects, which again is very similar to what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But what was the official explanation for what happened?
Well, the official explanation was, there's several things, but they thought that he was possibly chasing, there have been a couple things, and not there's no, really no official in the Blue Book report. There's really no official where it says, okay, this is what it is, we think.
Right.
But what they said maybe he was chasing a planet that he saw, which okay, it's daylight. That's almost that's kind of weird. or he was chasing something else that he thought he saw, a solar flare or a sun flare or something of that nature. So, I mean, they're going to throw in there several different things to try to discredit, because that's kind of what their job was, was to write off what it was. There's a very funny little meme out there on the internet where they've got all these UFO pictures and it says swamp gas or something under each one. And it's like the Air Force guide to identification of flying saucers. But, Project Blue Book was there to just kind of, throw doubt in the way of things.
Right.
But, there's pictures that you can actually see online of his plane. And it was absolutely demolished when it landed.
So two things about this one that were weird. Mm-hmm. This F-51 Mustang, he apparently went to an altitude of 25,000 feet before he apparently lost consciousness because he didn't have oxygen.
Yep.
These planes weren't designed to fly at that altitude.
No.
The other thing that's, this is creepy, right? But there's a guy named Richard T. Miller who was monitoring his radio talk from Scott Air Force Base over in Illinois.
Yep.
And he claims that he heard Mantell clearly exclaim over the radio, "My God, I see people in this thing."
Yep. And that's another part that kind of Blue Book leaves out. They don't leave out where the people were hearing his radio transmissions. And, you know, he was very, very fascinated with it. And I think that's what is the craziest part about it. There was something that kept him going after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knew that he was on to something that was not ours. And he was like, I've got to keep on going here. So that's kind of what he did was, I mean, he went until, of course, he passed out. Having no oxygen equipment, he eventually reached altitude, 22,000 feet, and that was it.
All right, a third one that's very credible happened in Louisville back in 1993. The LMPD police apparently got into a bit of a dogfight between a helicopter and an unidentified flying object around midnight. It was a glowing pear-shaped orb the size of a basketball. And
yep.
According to the pilots, it appeared to be studying their helicopter, circling it, and then ascending at a speed of around 600 miles per hour.
Yeah, that was that's one that's actually been covered on a couple different television shows because, you know, they have people they can interview.
Right.
But yeah, this was a situation where you had this helicopter that I believe they were going to for a robbery call or something like that, maybe a burglary call, something like that, that they were trying to get over to, and then they saw this object, and it was actually, you know, seemed to be messing with them, and it supposedly fired objects at them. So, you know, this is one where you had two veteran law enforcement officers inside of a helicopter, and they had never seen that before. So it's another one of those incidents you can chalk up to. You got two credible witnesses. You got people on the ground that were seeing stuff, you know, other officers that were seeing the helicopter and things. So, you know, there's no way that they're going to sit there and make that up just for fun when you have all these witnesses. All these witnesses are not going to come together and say,
right,
oh, well, let's just pretend there was a UFO tonight. Maybe they'll give us a day off.
Well,
you know, that's not the way that works.
They were responding to a burglary call.
Yes.
And
yep.
I think there was chatter over the radio about what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cops aren't going to go, hey, let's play a joke on everybody on our way to capture and apprehend
right.
a culprit, right? I mean,
yeah.
their business
yeah.
is trying to catch that criminal. They're not going to be like, I got a great idea. Let's play Little Green Man. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Let's not go after the burglary suspects. Let's go pretend we see a UFO.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, no, it's not. That's crazy. And, you know, in a lot of these incidents, there's other, when you look at the MUFON journals, you know, the UFO network, and they put out the journals on these incidents and things. Well, then they collaborate and they correlate sightings
right.
that go on with these incidents. And in the Mantell incident, they supposedly saw this object, you know, and in the other incidents, they supposedly saw these objects in other areas as well. So, I mean, that's people across different areas that have no clue about the other that are reporting things.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a little more evidence to follow there.
That was something else in the Stanford case. There were other people in surrounding counties that saw similar lights before these three ladies had their incident. And so
yeah.
it was
actually the cool part about the Stanford incident was I actually got to talk to the surviving lady. She was one of the three.
Okay.
And the craziest thing that happened there was I'd been trying to get a hold of her a lot, you know, and I wanted to try to get her side of things because I figured there was stuff missing.
Mm-hmm.
And she called me when I was sitting at a drive-through fast food restaurant. I was in line. I was waiting on my food. I had no writing material, so I literally pulled over in the parking lot because I knew my time was limited, and I wrote all my notes down on a napkin.
Wow.
So then that way I could get home and transcribe them over to my notes. But it was very interesting to talk to her. But she said one thing that was really weird for her. But she said through all the hypnosis and through all of her memories, she could not remember their hands and feet for some reason. She said that's the only thing that are missing from her memory of these creatures that they saw on the spacecraft.
Fascinating.
It's really crazy.
Again, I think it's interesting. Like, if you had somebody who said, I saw a UFO. Okay, I'm going to hypnotize you. Tell me your memory. And then right. they do it, and it's just one person. I'd be like, that might be like a subconscious dream right. coming to the surface, or a childhood fear, or something.
Or movies. You yeah. know, things can be influenced by movies or books or television shows.
But three
but
women.
When you've got three yeah. that their stories match.
Right.
And, you know, there are some burns and things on their cars and clothing and bodies.
Right.
I mean, you know, you've got some evidence there. And for me personally, you approach that in that fashion. And I'm sure the law enforcement didn't take it as serious back then. But, I mean, they could have probably analyzed that stuff today
right.
and seen what was on there.
Right, right. And maybe it was a government experimental vehicle. Maybe nobody wanted that to be
could've
known.
Been.
It's better
could've
to make
very
them
well
into
been.
Books. Yeah. I know that.
And
go ahead.
I think that's one thing too, that if you notice some of the UFO stuff through history, is eventually we will come out with an aircraft that looks very similar
right.
to what some people have seen, and right. they're like,
yeah.
well, it looks like you were the UFOs. Because, I mean, there was this whole thing back in probably the 90s of these triangles.
Yep, black triangular-shaped
UFOs.
Objects.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had the stealth fighters come right. out and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, I don't know if you heard. Did you hear Joe Rogan's episode with what's the guy's name? Bob Lazar.
No, I haven't. I haven't actually heard that one.
Okay, if you get, it's like 2.5-3 hours long, dude. You will not be sorry if you go back and get Joe Rogan's podcast, the Bob Lazar episode, and
yeah.
then watch the Bob Lazar documentary on Netflix.
Yeah, I've watched that.
Okay. Well,
if you go listen
to the podcast, it fills in some of the blanks. And I'll be honest with you, I told you this on the phone the other day. I'm an open-minded skeptic, right? Like
right.
my 9 times out of 10, I'm going to lean towards, we got some technology. The government, DARPA, is, you know, 30 years beyond
right.
what the average person is using in technology now. 9 times out of 10, I'm going to lean that way. But
yeah, that's kind of what I do. I'm very open-minded.
Right.
But I try to find a logical reason for everything.
Yeah.
And then whenever you're left with nothing but something unusual, then you got to kind of dig into that.
Well, that's the Sherlock Holmes thing. You know, when mm-hmm. you eliminate the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, must be the truth.
And that's like the Travis Walton case, you know, the abduction case. I've had the privilege to sit down with Travis numerous times, you know, when we do events with him or things like that, or I pick him up from the airport.
Right.
You know, I like to hear the true story behind it. And there's a lot of facts that, you know, that are not public that
right.
he has. And you're like, wow, that's crazy.
Travis Walton is the Arizona abduction, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
The loggers.
Yep.
And all of that
That's
stuff.
Another
yeah,
story
but,
where you have a guy who's passed lie detector test after lie detector test
uh-huh.
and has corroborating witnesses. But, you know, the point I was making about with the Joe Rogan podcast, here's the thing. As I said, I'm an open-minded skeptic. But I also, as a longtime talk radio host and studier of politics, I'm pretty good at spotting liars and BSers.
Right.
Bob Lazar saw something, and the
yeah.
government didn't want anybody to know what he saw. And I don't think he's lying. His interpretation may be wrong, but I don't think he's lying about what he saw, and I don't think he's lying in describing what he saw. His interpretation may be different because they were so compartmentalized in what they were studying, but I don't think he was lying. And the way the government is still going after him, to this day they're going
yes,
after him.
Yep. And here's the thing that you got to look at with Lazar. Now, if this was just some guy that has no intelligence as far as when it comes to chemistry and things like that. If he's just a guy and he's like, oh, I worked at Area 51.
Right.
And
right
I did
now.
This. But yet he has no ability to do things.
Right.
Then you're going to be like, eh, probably not. But Bob Lazar legitimately owns a company
that does nuclear stuff.
That does nuclear stuff. And he's created, you know, these propulsion engines. And he's, I mean, one of his other hobbies is he makes fireworks.
Right.
You know, but he's got all this knowledge, but yet you can't find his degree.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, he didn't just learn this stuff on, you know, out of a book.
Right.
So they are definitely messing with him. And I think that as we see coming forward, you're going to find out that Bob Lazar is even more credible as
yeah.
some of this stuff starts to slowly trickle out. And I think that the government, like you said, it's still compartmentalized, but I think they do that intentionally,
right?
Because they don't want one person to have the key to everything,
right?
And you know, so I think they have to break them into groups. And it's like, you work on this engine, but you don't know what this engine goes to,
right?
And then you work on this, but you don't know what that goes to, and then we'll all put it together.
Yeah. Let's talk now about the Navy coming, or the military and the U.S. government coming out and saying, okay, guys, these videos that were taken off the coast of California and off the East Coast, these tic-tac UFOs, they're real. We don't know what they are, and we don't know who's behind them.
Right.
And this all goes back to and there's been a bunch of scientists that have weighed in on this, because now it's kind of become, you know, people are actually legitimately considering what the heck is this. And there's scientists that are like, I don't know, this kind of doesn't obey the law of physics. You know, this doesn't seem right, what it was capable of doing. There's military members coming forward, breaking their silence, that are saying, look, we saw these things. We chased these things. We were on the radio with these things. Some of these tapes disappeared. It was these were objects that were doing things that literally under current physical, some people have said, well, maybe it was a drone that flies in a different way. No, they're not. What they're doing is not physically possible with the science that we know on Earth.
Right.
What are they?
You know, and here's the thing, kind of one thing back to Lazar's thing. You remember the element that he talks about?
Yeah, I believe, element 15.
Wasn't it like
115, yeah.
Well, they said, well, no, that can't exist.
Right.
They can't exist. And then now they've come forward, oh, well,
yeah, it does.
It does exist. Mm-hmm. So that tells you right now there's propulsion systems that the government knows about that we don't.
Right.
And they've researched them, and they 100% now know. But for the government to come out and say, we have no idea what this is, it tells you one thing. Well, I think they're playing dumb. You know, I think that they have a whole lot of, there's somebody within one of these departments. There's a group, there's a division that 100% knows what they are.
Right.
Now, of course, they're not going to just filter that out to everybody. And honestly, the president may not even know, because you got to think about it like this. And this is a point that somebody made, I heard one time, and it was really smart. Why would you give somebody that's going to be there for 4 to 8 years 100% full knowledge of everything?
Right.
You know, where they could leave and tell everything. Of course they're not.
Well, it's Trump. Trump. He'll blabber it out in a press conference.
He'll tweet
these
it
UFOs
up
are great. They're terrific. They're, yeah, they're the most fantastic UFOs in the world.
That's right. But it brings me back also to, you remember the Bin Laden thing where they had the stealth helicopters?
Yes.
Nobody knew those existed, and they flew them right out of Fort Campbell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they're like, oh, well, this is technology we've never seen before. There's stuff that we have no idea about.
Yeah.
And it's because we researched some of these crafts, I think.
And that whole
and their propulsion system.
Well, that's what Bob Lazar is saying. He's saying we have craft that have been here. He even said at one point that he thought one was like literally hundreds of years old, that they've been visiting our planet for a long time. Some of them have crashed. We're trying to back engineer their technology. You know, and going back to the element that he was talking about, Bob Lazar thinks that this is an anti-gravity sort of propulsion system. Basically, it works outside the field of gravity, or doesn't work with gravity. It's totally different. It generates its own, which if it does, that explains why something could literally do things physically we're not capable of understanding how to make it do those things, because we live in the world of gravity, and this thing supersedes that. I mean, that lines up with some sort of further advanced technology. What baffles me, though, is like, if these things are so far more advanced than us, why are they messing with us? They've been apparently doing it for hundreds of years, according to that theory. Why don't they just do whatever they want to do and then either leave us alone or take us out? Because if they want our planet, then they could obviously take us out. If they're here with malintentions, there ain't a damn thing we can do against somebody that has anti-gravity machines. You know what I mean?
And you got to look at it from this point of view, is I think that they almost view us as primitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to think about how far more advanced they would be if they've already developed this technology.
Right.
I mean, their intelligence is far beyond what we're capable of. And I think that's another thing that baffles the government, is they're sitting there like, what what do we do with this?
I have these fears that like here, I want it to be one of two things, Jeff. I prefer it be our technology, like the stealth helicopters, that we just right. have it, and that it's so super top secret that even branches of our military don't know what it is. And we're not quite sure what to do with it yet because we don't, you know, it's new technology. That's best case scenario. The next right. best case scenario is that it's aliens and they're just here. They see us as primitive. They're following the Star Trek directive. Leave them alone. We'll just get what we need right. out of the core of the Earth and leave, you know. Or
right.
the worst case scenario is it's China. You know what I mean? Like, that's yeah. the worst case scenario, that they've figured something out and leaped ahead of us in tech.
Yep. And, you know, that's very possible that it could be another country or whatever.
I'd rather it be aliens.
yeah, I would rather it be aliens, too, because then they're showing how far below we are
yeah.
on technology.
Yeah.
You know, but I think with the alien thing and, you know, with the abductions, it's almost like every one of these abduction cases. Now, some of the newer ones, you got to kind of, you know, you almost got to kind of look at the older ones, because
right.
the older ones were not so much influenced by society.
Right.
So you, when you start to see similarities between these old abductions and they're kind of going toward the same thing, it's almost like they were studying us for whatever reason.
Right.
And it's almost like they were looking at, like, why are they able to do this? Why are they able to do this? We want to find out.
Right.
So, I mean, who knows? Who knows how long they've been here? I mean, if you go to the Ancient Alien theory, which that's a popular TV show, of course.
Right.
But, I mean, if you look at Eric Von Daniken's original research stuff, he was finding evidence that there were UFOs or unknown visitors in societies across the world for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows, honestly, what's going on?
One of the most fascinating theories that I've heard about this is that that these are actually us
yep.
from the future. That
yep, I've heard that.
Yeah,
I've
that we figured out how to time travel, and that's why they typically try not to interact. Because obviously, if we were to discover that, it would probably implode the universe, but... that's a fascinating thing.
There's also theories of, you know, the way that they look, that, you know, that is us, and we've somehow got to figure out how to get back to where we were, and we've evolved so far because of our environment and everything that we're trying to come back and fix it.
Okay.
So who knows? I mean, there's you could go and you could dig into YouTube and go down that wormhole,
yeah,
and you could
forever.
Be stuck there for years and come out of there more confused than you ever were.
Right.
So, you know, I do find it funny that YouTube and stuff is starting to control their content as far as conspiracy theories and things go.
Right.
I mean, I do find that's, you know, well, that's kind of goofy,
yeah,
you know, but
no
why are they doing that?
No doubt. As a law enforcement officer, is it weird to talk about things like this?
No, I mean, I'm your resident weirdo. So, I mean, I dabble in everything, you know, as far as ghosts and Bigfoot and all of those things. I've always been into that stuff. But the cool part is, being in law enforcement, is you get to talk to other people that have had experiences, and they're
right.
like, hey, you know, don't tell nobody, but this is what happened. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Or, hey, we went on a call and this is what happened.
Right.
So, I mean, you kind of become the funnel of all the weird stuff that they run through you. And then you kind of get some access to some things that you normally wouldn't.
That's awesome.
So, you know, it's pretty cool to kind of get into that. But, you know, I've always been fascinated by this stuff. I always tell people, since I could read, you know,
yeah.
I would always get books on UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts and things. And then, of course, you know, back then you didn't have many television shows. You had Unsolved Mysteries and sightings and things like that. But, I mean, this stuff's been going on for years, you know, for thousands of years.
I think it's one way that humans work out our position in the universe.
It's
you know, the use of our imaginations, and I'm not saying they're, because obviously we've talked about some very credible things, and now the government's saying, hey, these are UFOs, we don't know what they are.
Yeah.
So obviously UFOs exist in that sense. Now, are they little green men? Who knows? But they obviously exist. What do you think these Tic Tac UFOs are? What's your theory?
Honestly, if they are not us, then there's some type of, I don't even know that it's a manned spacecraft. Right. Honestly, you got to think of it like this. If they are, we haven't really established a size of them. They've not been able to judge fully, I guess, how big they are.
Right.
But, you know, if you look at some of these sightings, they've said that they've seen a ship and then there's stuff coming out of it. You know, there's stuff, you know, flying out of it or going back to it. So who knows if these things are actually manned? They may be unmanned, almost like scouting type things for these other ships.
It would make sense. I mean, and in fact, if that's what they are, and Bob Lazar kind of holds this theory, they may not in fact be that much more advanced than us.
Right.
We are sending probes to, throughout the solar system. And they're not manned. But if somebody, if there was, say, a civilization on Mars, and they saw one of our probes land, and then a little robot come out of it. And,
yeah, they're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, be like, what's this? You know, and
we
and,
just invaded a planet.
Right.
You know?
And Lazar's theory is that it's just that wherever they come from in a different part of the universe, they have this element. And this element enables them to maybe go farther, faster in other ways. Because if you could defeat gravity, essentially, you could also defeat time. And in doing so, you could literally go between parts of the universe that are much farther apart. Yep. And yet, if it's because of the fuel you have, you may not, in fact, be all that more advanced. So they might just be going, huh, looks like we found life on another planet.
And that's the way he explained it, was they could almost bend time.
Right.
Where they could actually bend it, where they could just go straight in.
Right.
You know, using wormholes or whatever.
Yeah.
But... the weird part about it for me, for the Tic Tacs, is why are they not, 100% stealth?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You would think with that technology that they would have the ability to cloak themselves or have stealth technology because they can obviously defy gravity.
Well, because,
but, I mean, there's definitely something there that we're missing.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that the Air Force pilot described, or the Navy pilot described, was... It went from one place to a place that they were supposed to be in a few minutes. He said, how did it know that that's where we were going to be? And it was a distance of 60 miles. And it went in a matter of seconds, like less than seconds. And so it almost instantaneously appeared 60 miles away at a point they were headed to, which is
weird. You remember some of the abduction cases, they said that, like Travis Walton's case, for instance, he actually, when he was, went rogue and hit one of these creatures and ran off in the spaceship, he said that the seat that it seemed like that they sat in had no controls.
Right.
And it was almost like that it was in tune with whatever being would be that would sit there.
Right.
So, I mean, who knows what technology they're using to actually fly these things.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is fascinating. But for the government to come out and say, these things, here it is, here's video. We've said they didn't exist for years. Here it is now. They're here.
Yeah.
They know more.
Yeah.
You know, they always say that we're usually about 10 or 15 years, maybe even 20 years behind what the government actually puts out.
Yeah.
To the public. So they're far more advanced now. They're ahead of us. They know what's going on. They may even have one of these things, if not multiple, Tic Tacs, as they call them. And they may know exactly what it is now.
Well, you know,
but of course, they're not going to release this to everybody on the government standpoint.
Well, you know why?
It'd be mass hysteria.
Well, we bought all the toilet paper over a virus.
Of course we did. We bought every bit of toilet paper.
They will never tell us whether there's aliens or not because of what we did to the toilet paper.
I was on a podcast yesterday, and they were asking about, well, why do you think that they don't disclose certain things? And I'm like, we bought all the toilet paper for a virus that affects the lungs,
Right.
And we bought every bit of toilet paper.
Yeah.
What would you do if they said the UFOs and aliens exist? It would be insanity all across the country.
It'd be insane.
You can't do that. You gotta keep the sheeple. You gotta keep them where they need to be. You gotta keep the sheep where they are, and you can't let them know too much.
Yeah. All right. Before I let you go, where's the last place Bigfoot was spotted in Kentucky?
I'm currently researching in Anderson County.
Okay.
And that's had a lot of sightings. But I mean, it's seen all the time in the areas that I'm currently working. I'm a documentary filmmaker, kind of a side project. So I'm currently working on a documentary about Bigfoot in Kentucky. And so I'm kind of going out and visiting some of these hot spot areas. So, you know, and when I go out, I look at it just like a criminal investigation. You know, I use those same right. tools and trades, and I do the research, and I try to verify different things, but the devil's always in the details right. when it comes to any of this stuff.
Right.
When you dig down to the details and you're like, there's a detail there that a liar would not tell.
Yeah.
You know, there's something weird there.
Yeah.
That's where you got to look. And I mean, you know, who knows? There's been stuff, strange stuff in Kentucky ever since Kentucky started to be a state.
Well, it was a wild and
right.
wonderful land. You know, can you
that's
imagine
what
Daniel
said.
Boone
that's what they always
that,
said.
Peeking through that yep. Cumberland
and,
Gap. So.
And they always called it a dark and bloody ground as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, there were certain Indian tribes, Native American tribes, that would not come into Kentucky because of the weird stuff. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what we're dealing with around here?
Well, do me a favor and promise you'll text me when your documentary is wrapped up and come back on
with
us. Oh,
for sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
awesome.
Well, for sure. And I want to personally invite you. If you ever want to do a stream from the woods, you're welcome to come. I'll
absolutely.
Take you out.
Absolutely.
We'll go visit and do some crazy stuff.
That'll be a blast. I love it. Jeff Waldridge, thank you very much. You have a website or something that people can follow your project?
My production company is Out the Window Media. It's outthewindowmedia.com. And then, of course, you know, we do several events. We do CryptidCon in Lexington.
Yes.
That's CryptidCon.com. I do the Lawrenceburg Ghost Walk. That's kyghosttours.com. I do that every fall of the year here in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. And then, of course, you know, we have creepypeopletalent.com, and that's where we do all of the – we host all of the public events and do all that stuff. So my life is quite weird on a daily basis.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, Jeff Waldridge, thanks for your time. Thanks for your service in the law enforcement community.
Well, thank you very much.
Being on the front line for us and keeping our community safe. We appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
All right. That was fascinating. I love this stuff. Look, I am a open-minded skeptic, right? Like the Bigfoot thing, here's what I think. I think it could possibly exist. I'm not trying to get weird or whatever. I think it could, but I don't think it lives in Kentucky. There's just too many farms, too many people, and there's not enough. Like, there's people that see it, but I'm like, it's too easy to mistake a bear. We have a growing black bear population in Kentucky. I think that might be what people are seeing. But in the Pacific Northwest and Canada, some of the places out west that I've been in terms of when you're looking at wilderness, dude, I could see a primate of some sort that we just never actually found. We're finding new species all over the world all the time. So anyway, I'm an open-minded skeptic, but clearly the U.S. government knows something about these tic-tac UFOs. They've admitted they exist. They say they don't know what it is. And I think it's interesting that they're talking about it during a pandemic. So, fascinating stuff. Sometimes it's fun to just take a little walk on the wild and weird side, right? Hey, that's it for me today. Cameron's going to join us next week. We're going to talk about this kid who stole his parents' SUV and was on his way to California to buy a Lamborghini with the $3 in his pocket. He was pulled over in Utah. He was 5. We're going to talk about that. And then what's the first thing you're going to do when we get out from under the virus restrictions? That's all coming up on the Disruption Zone. Thanks to Cameron Mills, our co-executive producer and co-host, when he can get on the program with us, as well as thanks to Dynamics Productions, dxaudio.com. They provide the music for this program. You can follow us on Instagram at The Disruption Zone and at Great Lelando. And on Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. We're literally getting thousands of hits a week, thousands of downloads a week, and I have you to thank. But please share it if you want to help expand our voice and expand the entertainment of this podcast. Please keep sharing it with your friends. It's a free subscription at Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Google Play, and now on iHeartRadio's app. Just go to the app and search The Disruption Zone, and new episodes will be delivered straight to your phone. You can keep me around in your pocket. All right, guys. Love you all. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone.